Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost, and so we went digging.
Yeah, we did. We went digging into the ground. This is Harvey Wasserman back with another short Topia Green Power Wellness Show. That was the wonderful Dar Williams singing with the amazingly great Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Soartopia theme song. We got a double show today from 5 to 5:30 from the beginning here. We're going to talk about some really good news. Although it's a little mixed, the announced shutdown of the Fitzpatrick reactor in New York State has been announced by Entergy that they're going to close it down after this fuel cycle. We're going to talk with Jessica and Tim, who've been working on this forever. And then in the second half hour, 5:30, my token spirit of Bob Fitrakis is going to call in, and we're going to talk about the pot referendum in Ohio and also the election or the selection of a Tea Party governor in Kentucky that we don't really think won the election, frankly. It's ridiculous. And we're not even convinced, actually, that the Prop 3, the industrial corporate hemp marijuana proposal in Ohio, we're not convinced that lost either, frankly. I mean, the question is, what do we really even bother having elections for and just let these guys, you know, save the electricity of stealing it electronically and put their guys in? I don't think that guy won in Kentucky. I don't think the guy in Florida won in 2014. We don't think John Kasich won either, frankly, here in Ohio. So we'll talk about that in the second half of the show. But right now we have some news to celebrate. Tim Judson and Jessica, are you with us?
Yeah, this is Tim. Thanks for having me, Arthur.
Tim? Good.
This is Jessica. Thank you for having
me
on.
I'm not clear on how to pronounce your last name. Can you tell me your last name? Jessica?
Oh, my name is Jessica Azulay.
Azulay. All right, good. That's a beautiful name, actually. And Tim Judson from Nuclear Information Resource Service. So, Tim, why don't you start off? Tell us about this great announcement from Entergy about the Fitzgerald reactor in upstate New York.
Sure. Well, you know, this is something we've been expecting for a while, you know, with increasing bated breath over the last couple of weeks. Entergy has, you know, they announced about a month ago that they were considering closing both the Togarm reactor in Massachusetts and Fitzpatrick, basically because they're losing millions of dollars a year running these things, and they didn't see any daylight at the end of the tunnel. So with Togarm, they obviously, you know, made an announcement that we talked about on your show a couple weeks ago, and they had said that they were going to make a decision about Fitzpatrick by the end of the month, essentially because, you know, they were having a call with their investors on Monday and wanted to have, you know, news to tell them. But they kept this, you know, on pins and needles until the last minute. And in fact, you know, what they did was really outrageous. On Thursday last week, they basically sent the workers home for the weekend and told them that if they wanted to know whether the plant was going to close, they should call an 800 number that Entergy had set up to, you know, to get a voicemail message about it. And basically took until the last minute, until Monday morning, before Entergy announced that they're going to, they're going to close the plant, and probably in October of next year.
Jessica, Azulay, you want to add to that?
No, I think that's a really good summary by Tim. You know, I think that we are really pleased with Entergy's announcement. We think this was the right decision for the company to make. Obviously, they made the decision based on their bottom line, but for us, we're looking forward to the day when this really dangerous nuclear reactor stops making power and enters the decommissioning process.
Well, tell us about the timing of this. Why did they choose to shut when they said they're going to shut? And are we 100% sure they're actually going to do this? I mean, you know, Entergy jerked us around for years at Vermont Yankee. Are we reasonably confident that they're going to shut when they say they're going to shut?
Well, I think that Entergy has made up its mind that it wants to close the reactor. There were media reports in the weeks leading up to this announcement that there was an attempt to come to some kind of agreement with the state government over potentially bailing the reactor out or providing some kind of subsidy or changing market rules to favor nuclear power over other energy sources. Those talks were not fruitful, and so Entergy made the decision to shut down. So I think the company itself is resolved to not refuel the reactor next year and to shut down. Now we're not totally sure that the shutdown is going to happen because some state officials are now vowing to try to keep the plant open through some kind of legal or regulatory change. They're under a lot of heat from the local community over the tax revenue losses and the job losses that they see coming with this closure, and so they're kind of exploring whether they can try to keep the plant open. We just heard recently that there are now negotiations have resumed between Entergy and the governor's office. So, you know, we're monitoring that. We're concerned about that, and we're asking people who want to see this closure go forward to contact Governor Cuomo and to contact Senator Schumer to ask them to let the closure go forward and to not do some kind of backdoor or deal or arrangement to subsidize the reactor or favor it in the market somehow.
It's completely outrageous. Well, first of all, let's talk about the timing. They have loaded the fuel, Tim Judson, at Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick is near Syracuse, is that right?
It's in Oswego County on the shore of Lake Ontario, about 30 miles north of Syracuse.
Okay, so it's a nice tropical climate there. And they've been operating, this is a very old reactor, Fitzpatrick, although there are older ones in the country. I guess Janae is the second oldest in the country, which is not far away. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. Janae is just about 30 miles west of Fitzpatrick, also on the shore of Lake Ontario. And Guinea is only about 20 miles from Rochester, which is one of the biggest cities in New York. It's got a particular, it's a particularly risky scenario for that reactor running.
We're hoping Guinea shuts soon also. So Fitzpatrick here, this place is losing money. They loaded up fuel not long ago, and I guess the fuel is going to run until next year. Is that correct?
Yeah, Fitzpatrick refueled last fall in October 2014, and they've actually been it's been kind of a repeat scenario the last 2 years. We've known that Fitzpatrick was losing money and by the bucket load for about 2.5 to 3 years now. And 2 years ago, when Entergy was trying to decide whether they were gonna refuel Fitzpatrick in 2014. They strung us along like this, at that time. But I guess they decided, to wait another couple of years to figure out whether they were going to really be able to get a bailout for this plant. And this time around, it just became clear that it's not going to work out. And so here we are now.
Well, good. So we're estimating, what is the date that they said they would shut? Sometime next year, right?
It's looking like October 2016, yeah.
All right, so that would give them basically 2 years on that load of fuel, and that essentially would run that fuel out, and then they would unload it and shut the reactor. That's the plan. Do they have anywhere near enough money in their decommissioning fund to actually shut this reactor?
Oddly enough, it depends. I mean, they've got enough money to satisfy the NRC's requirements, which is, in itself, kind of a rarity within the industry. Entergy bought Fitzpatrick as well as one of the reactors at Indian Point downstate from the New York Power Authority, which is, essentially a state-run power company. And NYPA, when it owned the plants, had actually, put more than enough money into the funds at the time, in the decommissioning funds at the time. So Entergy, actually has a fully funded decommissioning fund for Fitzpatrick right now.
Well, that's rare among reactors. All right, so it's all set up now. The fuel's going to run out in a year, and they've got money to shut it down. And now, the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, who has been, you know, thankfully fighting to get the two reactors at Indian Point shut, especially since one doesn't have a license and the other one is about to expire, units 2 and 3, and who's actually been pretty diligent, I think, on trying to shut Indian Point, comes out of the blue here and says that he's angry that they're shutting Fitzpatrick. Give me a break. What's going on?
And Jessica, do you want to take that?
Sure. You know, we don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, but we do know that the governor has been under a lot of pressure around a number of job losses and economic struggles in upstate New York. And so, you know, he's probably making these statements because of the potential job losses at Fitzpatrick. We're rallying our forces and, you know, asking people to call the governor and put pressure on him to let the reactor close, to let Fitzpatrick close. And, you know, we also think that there's a number of reasons why this reactor closure should go forward. Entergy says it's projected to lose something like $60 million a year going forward. And so if the state wants to save the reactor, that means that ratepayers are going to have to subsidize the reactor to the tune of $60 million or very likely more, because $60 million would just let them break even. It wouldn't guarantee them a profit. And, of course, they're a for-profit company that wants to make a profit. So if the state forces them to stay open, then ratepayers would be forced to subsidize the reactor. And there's very little justification for making ratepayers do this. There's already been a reliability study that's been done. It was paid for by Entergy and done by the New York Independent System Operator. And Entergy has publicly said that reliability study shows no need for Fitzpatrick. There's no issues with the lights going out or inadequate resources, inadequate power in the region if the plant closes. And so we think it's very difficult to justify keeping the reactor open on the backs of ratepayers.
So Entergy itself has said that the reactor is not needed.
Yes.
What a refreshing change. Some actual honesty from a utility, from a new owner. Who would have thunk it? So essentially then, as at Vermont Yankee, Entergy is now trying to get out from under a money-losing reactor. And in waltz is the governor. So how serious do we think the governor is in fighting to keep Fitzpatrick open?
You know, I think that we'll find that out in the coming days. It's hard to know right now. I think that the governor showed, you know, some wise leadership and, you know, made the right decision not to enter into a deal with Entergy before the announcement was made to close the reactor. And he was under a lot of pressure to cut some kind of deal with Entergy. And he didn't do that. And so I don't know what scenario might change that calculation. I don't know what else might be on the table, but I think that we'll find out in the coming days how serious the governor is.
Well, but that's a pretty weird calculus, Tim. I mean, here the governor is in negotiations with the utility. He could have made a deal with them, I suppose. I mean, mm-hmm. not the utility, the reactor owner.
Mm-hmm.
You would think he could have made a deal with them. Then no deal is made. Then they announce they're going to shut. Now he's freaking out. I mean, that doesn't add up.
Well, I mean, I think that he actually, I mean, yeah, it sounds like a mixed signal, and it may very well be a mixed signal. But I think, you know, what's happened with the Ginna reactor just down the road over the last year may have cautioned him against cutting a deal before Entergy showed it was really serious about closing. I mean, what happens, you know, with Ginna, this is starting almost 2 years ago now, was Exelon basically, you know, sort of had backdoor negotiations with the state about possibly thinking about closing Ginna if it didn't get a subsidy. And they allowed, you know, that process to go forward and even, you know, got into a whole proceeding at the Public Service Commission to negotiate a subsidized contract before knowing, first of all, whether Exelon would really actually close Ginna without a subsidy. And, you know, and on the basis of a reliability study that's turned out to be really flawed, in even justifying a subsidy for Guinea. And so I think, you know, when Entergy started throwing around the thought that it would close Fitzpatrick, the governor responded rightly by saying, you know, look, we're not going to negotiate with you until you decide whether you're going to close, and we're not going to let you, you know, use the workers at Fitzpatrick as a pawn just to get a subsidy from us when we're not even sure you really need it. So I think, you know, I think he played it, you know, in a good, principled, smart way beforehand. You know, now it's not clear whether he's, you know, whether he's really serious about keeping it open or whether he's trying to force Entergy's hand on something else.
Well, so I think what we need to do now, what the people who want Entergy to shut this ridiculous reactor along with the two in Indian Point, is that there needs to be a study that shows that more jobs will be created with the shutdown of Fitzpatrick and of these other reactors than would be sustained by continuing to operate them. I mean, is there anybody around to do that study and to get some push with it?
Well, Harvey, it's funny that you mentioned that because we actually just did that.
Well, cool. Let's hear about it.
So Nears and Degreed published a report last week called Replacing Fitzpatrick that looked at this very question. You know, do we really need Fitzpatrick for jobs? You know, what, you know, can we replace it, you know, with renewable energy and take care of the community in the process? And what we found is that, you know, I mean, absolutely we can. You know, renewable energy and energy efficiency are cheaper than nuclear power at this point, and we could actually replace Fitzpatrick with a combination of wind and energy efficiency for less than the cost of running Fitzpatrick, and you know, could even, you know, build enough renewables and efficiency to replace fossil fuels as well, and we could provide over two times as many jobs as they're currently employed at Fitzpatrick. And so that's what we're really encouraging the governor to do is, you know, we support his concern for, you know, for the loss of jobs, the impact on the community. But we can actually use this, use Entergy's decision to close Fitzpatrick as a springboard, to really building a green economy in upstate New York and creating more jobs that the nuclear industry can possibly employ.
So where can people get this study? I mean, if you'll send me the link, I'll post it up at nukefree.org and we'll post it up on the, website at PRN, but who did you do the study with, and where can we get it?
So it was actually Nears and Degreed. Jessica and I did the study, and you know, you can find it on either Nears' website at nirs.org or Degreed's website. Jessica, do you want to give that?
Sure. Well, there's a website called Beyond Fitzpatrick. It's beyondfitzpatrick.org. And it's a petition website. It's a place where people can go to send a message to the governor and other state officials saying they don't want to bail out of this dangerous and dirty reactor and that they want to see Fitzpatrick close. The petition also calls for a just transition to a renewable energy and a fair and responsible decommissioning of Fitzpatrick. And we have the study up there as well as other resources for people that are interested in finding out more about Fitzpatrick.
Excellent. So all right. So now do you have a
.org.
How have you publicized this study? You just post it up? Have you written an article about it or anything like that?
We issued a press release last week, and you know, there's been a couple of news articles that talked about it, we're promoting it, you know, through our email list and all that kind of stuff too.
All right, good. So I'll get it. I'll put it up at newtweet.org, and we'll put it at PRN, and maybe write an article about it. That'll be good. Now, do you have a similar study for Indian Point?
We don't have a study like that for Indian Point, but one was actually done 3 years ago, for two of the organizations that have been working to close Indian Point, Riverkeeper and Natural Resources Defense Council. They commissioned a consulting firm called Synapse Energy Resources to actually come up with a detailed study on how Indian Point could be replaced. And they found that you could replace Indian Point completely within a few years with the combination of energy efficiency, wind power, and solar power. at basically the same cost as running Indian Point. And that report was done three years ago. Before the cost of solar really fell through the floor, and when wind energy was more expensive. So we actually think that, if you looked at it again, you'd find that, we could replace Indian Point for less than what it costs to run the plant.
And then how does the job creation ratio work? If you were going to shut Fitzpatrick, how many, were there about 600-700 jobs there now?
Jessica, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, so there's about 613 jobs right now at Fitzpatrick, and there's been various studies looking at the job creation potential of different energy resources. For our study, we used this. I'm just looking through the study right now to get the exact numbers for you. But we used the study from the
the Political Economy Research Institute, right?
Oh, thank you, Political Economy Research Institute, and they found that energy efficiency has the highest job creation potential of pretty much all energy resources, including dirty energy resources and renewable energy resources. For every $1 million invested in energy efficiency, there's about 7 jobs created. Wind produces somewhere around 4 to 5 jobs per $1 million invested. And so we took a look at this and showed that replacing Fitzpatrick with energy retrofits and wind would create about 1,400 jobs over a 20-year time frame. And that's more than 2 times the number of jobs that Fitzpatrick can sustain right now.
All right, we like that. So let's go up and give it to the governor and get him off this case here about yelling at keeping Fitzpatrick open. I mean, I assume he's not going to come up with any money to give them to keep it open. I mean, let's just hope he's posturing at this point in time. It is a little disorienting for him to have him out there fighting to keep Indian Point shut and then turn around and yell and scream about wanting to keep Fitzpatrick open. I mean, that's kind of weird.
For those of us living in the region and, feeling threatened by this reactor, which is a very dangerous reactor, it's a Fukushima-style reactor. We know that the containment is a flawed design that will not contain an accident if one were to happen. So, those of us who live in the region feel really threatened by this reactor. We certainly don't want to be asked to pay more for our electricity to prop the reactor open. And so I just think that the governor needs to hear about the dangers at Fitzpatrick and needs to hear some outrage from, the communities that would be asked to foot the bill. Central New York is experiencing a lot of economic difficulties. There's a lot of low-income people here in Syracuse, where I live, that are already struggling to pay their energy bills. So it's totally outrageous to be thinking about propping up such a dangerous and dirty energy source on the backs of ratepayers.
Yeah, now I'm looking here. I posted a piece at nukefree.org. On the green side, we have part of the nukefree.org website does green power stuff. And they are getting a green light now to an offshore wind farm in the UK, which would be in the ocean offshore, which is not anchored to the sea bottom. And, of course, there's probably no greater wind resource in the world than the Great Lakes, Lake Ontario, Lake Erie. It's all purple up there on the wind maps. And certainly these windmills could go into the lake. These two reactors, Fitzpatrick and Ginna, are on the shore, right? And so these windmills offshore could easily supplant them very quickly. The world's largest wind farm gets a green light, a floating wind farm. So this is a new technology, a big breakthrough, really, because they think what they can do is have these things with big flotations instead of and then have them anchored to the sea or lake bottom with three cables banged into the sea floor, but not having to stick a the post into the sea floor, the lake floor, that should really facilitate the quick development of wind up there.
Yeah, and, you know, central and upstate New York, we already do have, you know, quite a bit of wind that's been developed and more wind coming online. It's a great region for wind. We also have manufacturing coming online to manufacture solar panels, that's creating hundreds of jobs, way more than the number of jobs that would be lost at Fitzpatrick. Here in Syracuse, we're getting an LED light bulb manufacturer that's going to create 420 jobs. And the governor has been supporting these kinds of efforts. He's created sort of an atmosphere and some state support for these manufacturing companies to come in and start building the green economy. So we really, you know, this is the direction that we really hope New York is moving in. These are the kinds of jobs that are, you know, safer and more sustainable for our communities. And so we're really hopeful that you know, soon we'll find out that Fitzpatrick really is, that this closure announcement is going to go forward and that we can put this horrible, dangerous nuclear chapter behind us.
Absolutely. It's terrific, and I hope this washes over into Indian Point and also to the ones at 9 Mile. New York State at this point in time has two reactors at Indian Point, which are, you know, one's not licensed and one licensed about to expire. There's two at 9 Mile, which we haven't talked about at all, which is up on Lake Erie, on Lake Huron, right? Is it Lake Huron or Ontario?
No, they're actually right next door to Fitzpatrick on Lake Ontario. They're actually, you know, really a three reactor site, but you know, Fitzpatrick and 9 Mile have always been owned by different companies.
Oh, I see. So there's three there, and then you have Ginna, which is old, and that's one. So mm-hmm. There's six reactors in New York State now, and then we see two. One is definitely going to shut. Ginna should be shut. When is the fuel run out on this fuel vote at Ginna?
That's in March 2017.
Well, so we hope that will be the end of it for Ginna. I guess the odds are reasonable that will be the end of it. And then 9 Mile, these two reactors are really dangerous. And then, of course, the two at Indian Point are probably the most, in terms of the number of people that will be immediately harmed, probably two of the worst reactors in the world. We've been talking to Tim Jetson and Jessica Azulay. I want to ask you very, very quickly, we're going to take a break and switch over to marijuana in a minute here, but I have read recently, I think it was Forbes, carried an article saying that the Chinese have now decided to build 300 reactors, which came to me out of the blue. My understanding was that they were still arguing about how many more reactors are going to build in China. Do either of you know, have been following that at all?
Well, you know, we've been following it a little bit at NEARS because, you know, we're in touch with the global movement. And, you know, I don't know that there's an official decision to build 300 reactors in China as much as there might just be a projection that's, you know, what they're going to want to do to, you know, in the future. But there's really only about, you know, 40 or 50 reactors being actually, you know, that are actually being planned and in China right now, and it's very unlikely that they would be able to, you know, to build that many, you know, that many reactors in China. It's just you know, it's more of a pipe dream than anything else, I would imagine.
God, I mean, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare for me. I never. My understanding was that they were still just trying to figure out what to do, even with these 40 or 50 that they were thinking they were going to build.
I mean, China's really the only country in the world that's building a significant number of new plants. They've got about, you know, 20 or 30 that are in construction right now, and like I said, another 20 or 30 that are in the planning stage. You know, I mean, China's energy consumption is still growing at a pretty fast clip, and they reached that climate agreement with the U.S. last year, which is a pretty significant thing in and of itself, where, you know, China basically committed to building as much carbon-free energy in the next 15 years as the entire U.S. electricity supply, which is pretty massive. And, you know, and if you think about it that way, you know, if China's going to get there, there's no way they're going to do it with nuclear. It just takes too long and it's too expensive, and too unreliable to be able to build up that much in that period of time. So, you know, at the same time, you know, China is building renewable energy with wind and solar at a much faster clip than they're putting up nuclear. So there's just, you know, I mean, I think some people might want to invest in nuclear in that way, but I think, you know, economic reality is going to win out at the end. And, you know, and they're really not going to be able to do that.
Well, it struck me, I think it was Forbes or Fortune or Bloomberg, one of those places, just casually mentioned that China was going to build 300 reactors. And it struck me as kind of wishful thinking on the part of the American reactor industry, but, you know, I wondered if you do. So, listen, it's been an honor, Jessica Azuay and Tim Jensen. We'll have you back. It's, we're celebrating the announcement that the Fitzpatrick reactor will close, as announced by Entergy. We're hoping Exxon will follow up soon with the announcement about Janae, and let's get Indian Point shut. Crew in New York, I'm sure, be very grateful to be out from under the threat of the two reactors at Indian Point. So is Bob Fitzgerald with us here? Bob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, Bob. So we're going to take a short, quick break, go out and smoke a joint, and come back. Tim and Jessica, you're welcome to stay on if you like. We're going to be talking about the Proposition 3 in Ohio and the corporate marijuana legalization. We'll take a very short break, and we'll be right back with Bob Fitzgerald.
You're taking a break.
Was
then.
There an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve?
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Carrie Harrison with you, inviting you to join me on The Smart Show every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're not able to catch me live, you can go to the archives at prn.fm or harrison.fm. Don't forget, it's impeccable behavior to rate the show on iTunes. We come to you each Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, live from Hollywood, where we bring on the movers and shakers, whistleblowers and muckrakers. There's nothing like it anywhere else, and it's here on PRN.FM. If you like a smart show, then join me, Carrie Harrison. It's Harrison on the Progressive Radio Network. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
You are listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way,
we are back with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I just had a very joyous half hour talking about the shutdown of the Fitzpatrick nuclear reactor projected next October in upstate New York. And now we're joined by my co-conspirator Bob Fitzgerald for a quick run through the outcome of the corporate pot referendum here in Ohio, Proposition 3. Bob, well, let me describe it real quick for those of you who haven't, and Bob, you'll correct me as I go ahead. But this was sponsored by a cartel, essentially, of 10 major corporate backers who were going to put in a bunch of money, set up 10 grow sites in Ohio, indoor grow sites of up to 300,000 square feet each. They were going to raise genetically marked marijuana to sell in about 1,100 licensed outlets around the state of Ohio, figured on $1 billion-a-year industry, which says a lot for marijuana when you get right down to it. And, I mean, a lot of people were smoking it, obviously, and now eating it in edibles. My understanding is about 40% of the gross volume done on marijuana now in Washington State and in Colorado is in edibles. These guys were going to have not exactly a monopoly, an oligarchy. The public would be allowed to grow up to 4 plants in their house, but not sell. And I guess not take the pot out of their house. Bob, can you fill in the rest of the details on this, and then we'll talk about what happened.
Well, again, RO
which the state deemed a monopoly, really, as you correctly pointed out, was 10 corporations that owned the grow sites, and they could grow up to 300,000 square feet indoors of marijuana. And again, it would have given, they were clearly an oligopoly, you know, a few people controlling the billion-dollar market. And that went down to defeat. But there's some interesting stuff, the usual stuff in Ohio. We found a screenshot from Dayton where it was leading by 65 to 35, 65%. And then 10 minutes later, it had flipped.
Jesus. Okay, so let's get this straight here. You sure you weren't smoking something when you were watching this, right?
No, it was like 2004. In fact, I was looking it up because it was so familiar. And you and I wrote an article together in 05 after the Ron Reform Ohio Now issues where we had very similar problems where, you know, the Ron was supposed to pass by 26 points and it ends up, you know, losing by 40 points. tracking polls, the dispatch polls are showing a landslide victory for reform measures from a nonpartisan election commission, and then people vote to have a totally partisan commission. And it looked like there was problems with vote flipping there.
Well, of course, standard operating procedure in Ohio held in that very early in the evening, we see on the news reports that there are the glitches. This is the key word here in Ohio electoral electronic elections here. There are glitches in the machines in Cincinnati, and then the ACLU goes in, and of course the Secretary of State of Ohio refuses to provide provisional ballots for people. So people turn up to vote in their busy day. It's a Tuesday, a work day, and they turn up to vote, and the machines aren't working, and the election poll workers say, well, come back later. I mean, come on. And this could all be solved technically anyway if there were provisional ballots there, but the Secretary of State apparently doesn't believe in provisional ballots, and so then the ACLU has to go to court, and the polling stations were supposed to close at 7:30, which was ridiculous to begin with, and then they made them keep them open until 9, I don't know if the voting machines ever got to work again, but certainly there were no paper ballots there, right? Did you follow that one up, Bob?
Well, what was glitching was what we've warned about repeatedly in recent years, Harvey. That is, the new danger is electronic poll books. So you show up to vote, and essentially you're not in the electronic computerized poll book, which are run by far right-wing corporate partisans, you know, like ES&S and Hard Inner Civic. And these right-wing organizations, partisan, for-profit, using secret software, proprietary software, control, instead of having it on paper, they've got it on a computer. So you show up and say, hi, I'm here to vote. I've registered. I've voted here for 10 years. And the computer says, no, you're not.
Right. And then you have no recourse.
Right. No. And here's what should happen in those situations. I mean, there should be provisional ballots on hand. But when we went to our poll, they didn't even have paper ballots. So if you didn't want to vote on the machine or the machines would have went down, usually you have paper ballots so people can still vote and have them scanned. And paper ballots are preferable because you can actually audit them. But when Jennifer Bruner was Secretary of State, you know, you made sure there was enough provisional ballots or paper ballots. Now, because of John Husted, the Secretary of State, who inserted himself heavily as a partisan anti-marijuana advocate because he wants to be governor someday, into the issue debate over marijuana. You remember he kept coming up with a unheard of interpretation that if issue two passed and issue three passed, even if issue three had more votes, the Ohio Constitution says then issue three would triumph. He came up with, well, issue two got certified first, so they would win even with less votes. So he was out campaigning as the Secretary of State to knock down issue three. And it's also his office that's responsible to oversee these electronic poll books and these weird, you know, these Secretary of State's office is supposed to monitor the boards of control. And these boards of control, like in Dayton, one minute, you know, the levy is up, the issue's up 30-65%. 10 minutes later, the screen shows the numbers flipped, and the yes is in the no position, and the no is in the yes position.
We're talking with Bob Patrykas, a co-author with me of six books on election theft, publisher of the Columbus Free Press and freepress.org website. A professor of political science at Columbus State and longtime election protection activist, including a stint monitoring elections in El Salvador. El Salvador has nothing on Ohio. Do you think, Bob Patrykas, that it's possible that a legitimate vote count of Proposition 3 legalizing corporate pot would have passed?
Here's what I know. I've been talking to people inside the campaign, and they're concerned because their internal polling, their tracking polls, and I understand a poll by Zogby indicated that they were either winning or it was very, very close. So suddenly to go down nearly 2-1 when, you know, you expect to win or be very close, should be cause for concern. This is what happened in 05 with Reform Ohio Now, is people had a right to vote that they didn't want gerrymandered congressional districts. It was winning by 26 votes in the poll, and suddenly it loses by 40 points or so. You just don't have 66-point shifts on issues like this from the polls. I mean, something is fundamentally wrong. It's not the polls. Something is wrong with the instrument that is recording the vote. That is the secretly programmed computer voting machines and the secret poll books, which nobody knows who's actually programming them because it's all a secret. We should look at those very closely. So there is a possibility. I'm going to try and get all these polls, and I'll come back on a future show. And, you know, we can calculate the probability of whether or not this should have passed. And I'm talking about someone who doesn't support it. I mean, I didn't vote for it. I know you did. I didn't.
Right.
But I'm more concerned with the issue that it's a precursor to the 2016 presidential election. They're just getting their game in order on how to jack votes.
Right. Well, of course, the proper response when asked to how you voted on a marijuana referendum is, I don't remember. But, you know, I will admit to voting for Prop 3, and I know you voted against it. So that's the first time we ever publicly disagreed, and that's good to be on both sides of this issue. Well, the one side we're issue on, okay, here's a question for you then. If there's controversy over the actual vote count, why don't we have a recount, Bob Patrykas? What's stopping us from having a recount?
Well, part of the problem, the margin's too high for an automatic recount. So somebody would have to pay upwards of $500,000 to recount. And even if we did recount, it's very difficult on these machines because they're not really like ballots. Some of them are opti scans, others aren't. So a lot of the stuff is thermopaper, which is really hard to recount, and a lot of it gets tangled up in the machines themselves. So they've designed machines in a democracy that are virtually impossible to recount, Harvey.
What democracy would you be talking about, Bob? Certainly not Ohio.
Yeah, you're right. It's a third world nation when it comes to voting.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, these guys had a ton of money. You would think that they would have taken precautions. I know you talked to some of these corporate people who, Ian James and that crew, and they were warned about this.
Yeah, I really wish, you know, for a small amount of money, and I mean a small amount of money, we could have got monitors throughout the nations to monitor and do what they did in Montgomery County, where Dayton is, to take screenshots of these Board of Election results coming in real time. Somebody was smart enough to see the flip in Dayton. And again, the, you know, glitching of the poll books in Cincinnati, you know, made statewide news. But who knows what was happening in real time on these computers, these central tabulators at the boards of election.
Well, you know, I saw one of the reports on Cincinnati, and it's always the same deal. You know, got some reporter, and they're merrily saying, "Oh, well, you know, there was a glitch in Cincinnati, and people couldn't vote, and you know, it's just boys being boys, computers being computers, and of course the ACLU has gone to court, and everyone can vote later, so it's okay."
Here's the interesting thing: where was the backup paper, right? Why do you show up with a computer poll book when you know computers break down, glitch? Why didn't they have a paper backup where they could go to the paper, which they've used in virtually every election until recently? It makes no sense that you would push everything on a partisan, secretly programmed poll book.
I think that, Bob, you and I are going to have to put a piece out. Was Ohio's corporate pot referendum stolen? I mean, we really have to bring this up. It's amazing, though. You know, nobody wants to deal with this. You and I have been blacklisted at Daily Coast. Huffington Post won't cover our articles. We'll get published at PRN and at, Common Dreams and Counterpunch and the usual
stuff.
Well,
that's because you're a conspiracy theory, Harvey. Just because they can hack the Pentagon, hack the lottery, hack the U.S. government, hack the president's office, it doesn't mean they can hack 20-year-old, you know, faulty machines with no protection. Those are super safe because they have no protection.
Right, and just because the election is being run by a Secretary of State who's out campaigning for one for a point of view on the ballot, I mean, that is astounding. Here, this son of a bitch is running the actual election. He's supposed to be conducting a fair election, and he's doing everything in his power. I mean, he actually sued these guys in the middle of, for some kind of fraud, you know, a weekend before.
Their signatures. He was suing them criminally, trying to get them arrested because of their signatures. He was making rulings that go against the Ohio Constitution, and he was campaigning to defeat the measure. And this is the same man that in 2012 secretly put on computer patches in at least 39 counties, the heavy Democratic counties, as so-called experimental patches, which is illegal under Ohio law. That's John Houston.
Yeah, he's the Secretary of State. And, of course, in the middle of this campaign, Roger Stone, I love this story.
Roger Stone, aptly named.
Yeah, there's no D at the end there. Roger Stone, an operative in the Reagan campaign in 1976, comes out. I guess Kasich went at it after Trump for something. I don't follow those guys anymore. But Kasich and Trump got into it, and Stone is working for Trump, and he comes out and says it in 19. Well, you tell us, Bob. It's such a great story.
Well, yeah, Roger Stone comes out, who was working in the 76 Reagan campaign when Reagan tried to upseat Jerry Ford, and says that John Kasich was fired.
Wait. Kasich is the current governor of Ohio, and he is ferociously anti-pot now. And so and Roger Stone is a major figure in the Republican Party and has been for more than 30 years.
You know, he was the next year, 77, he was the, president of the Young Republicans nationally.
Right. And this is 40 years he's been in the Republican Party. So what does he say about our anti-pot governor here in Ohio?
Well, he said that John Kasich was fired from the Reagan campaign in 76 for essentially selling pot to the field organizers.
The problem was he was charging too much. I guess that's why they fired him, right?
Well, I'm thinking that's the first positive thing I've ever heard about Kasich. I'd like to believe he was selling it at a discounted entrepreneurial price.
Right. Well, he was selling it especially to deadheads, our current governor who's talking about Jesus all the time.
People were stoned, they were more likely to think Ronald Reagan was brilliant.
Reagan himself was stoned, but he was stoned on Alzheimer's, apparently. We're talking with Bob Fitrakis here, my co-conspirator on the 6 books about election protection. We got to mention also Brad Friedman has run a very compelling piece about the election for governor next door in Kentucky. Have you looked at that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so Brad is saying
I saw the headline, but, it's hard to keep track of which one they're stealing next.
Yeah, well, he's saying that, this surprise, this upset victory by this Tea Party governor who's going to completely rape and pillage the state of Kentucky is bogus. All the polls show the Democrat had 3, 4, 5 points going in, and then suddenly – the votes flip and you got a lunatic who's running Kentucky now, who's going to go after Medicare and Medicaid and all these other things. And, 300,000-400,000 people are going to lose their health care because, they're able to flip the vote in the state. And, the one thing good about Kentucky is that we do have a senator there, Rand Paul, who advocates legal pot. And actually, I think Mitch McConnell, I think, came out for legal hemp. Kentucky and Tennessee were always really big hemp growing states back in the days of the colonies in the early American Republic. That was their number one or number two cash crop behind tobacco. And now this guy, this lunatic Tea Party guy, is going to come in there. Although I don't know what the Tea Party is going to say about pot. I will say I did speak to a Tea Party group here in Columbus once, and I started talking about legal pot, and they were all like silent. So I don't know, Bob. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, it depends on, they purged a lot of their libertarians, right? The original Tea Party movement was kind of against bailouts and subsidies. But in Ohio in particular, they purged the libertarian wing for being too open-minded and went to the Koch brothers AstroTurf, who the Koch brothers kind of bought up the movement, and they turned it into, kind of a corporate fascist institute where any incredibly dumb idea that savages ordinary people's lives is considered, a great policy.
Yeah, now we have precisely that guy as Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan is the ultimate corporate fascist. He's going to go after Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. I mean, this is a big deal. So essentially we've seen, are the guys who sponsored the corporate pot referendum here, are they going to do anything about this, or are they going to keep their mouth shut?
I don't know. I mean, I've been putting in calls, and I know at least one of the growers, and these growers have a fair amount of money, may be willing to put a little money into it, because it's going to involve going to 88 different county boards of elections, and auditing the elections results in a random way, often suing writs of mandamus to get to the paper. So, again, the free press is more than willing to do that. I'm an election attorney. We've done it over and over again, is that I want to see the tracking polls, the internal polls, the Zogby poll, and then compare them to the actual results. And if, you know, they're way outside the margin of error and it's totally implausible, then you've got to think John Husted and his friends are tampering with the election in Ohio.
Well, what was it? It was finally, it was 2-1 against, right?
Yeah, it was like 65-35, nearly 2-1
against.
Well,
that's ridiculous. That just didn't happen. I'm sorry. There's no way that they won 2-1 in Ohio against legal pot. It's just, when
well,
the polls
you know,
show...
they stole the Ron elections again in 05 by much larger margins, and nobody protested. You know, that was like a trial run.
That's ridiculous. You and I are going to have to go meet with Oscar Robertson and these guys, and, you know...
Well, I'm willing to do that as long as I get to play one-on-one with Oscar because he looks pretty old. I think I could take him at least in a horse.
Well, it was such a psychedelic experience to turn on the TV and see this white-haired, really nice-looking old black man, Oscar Robertson, the great Oscar Robertson, who won an NBA championship with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar back when he was Lou Alcindor, for God's sakes. And talking about marijuana, I mean, come on, you know, that is just a surreal experience, but there they are. And, you know, Ian James, these guys strike me as pretty, you know, out there. I don't know why they would take this lion down. I mean, maybe we're trying to get somebody with money to take this seriously because these guys got really screwed. There's no doubt about it. You know, they might have lost close. Maybe, you know, 52-48, something like that. But there is no way in hell that the people in Ohio voted 2-1 against this pot referendum when 60% of the public supports it being legal. That's ridiculous. So,
I couldn't agree with you more. And when these machines go down in Cincinnati, the computer, you know, poll books, when you see election flipping on machines in Dayton, it calls for an audit of the state.
Well, absolutely. And I first of all, I think we'll make two stops. We'll go see Oscar Robertson, and then we'll go up to the State House and see if Kasich will sell us some pot. What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking you might want to see Nick Lachey of the boy band 98 Degrees. Because he was one of the growers out of Cincinnati as well.
Yeah, and
go
never
see
heard
Oscar,
of those guys.
We might see Nick Lachey as well.
Well, plus we got two grandsons of William Howard Taft, right? And
I'm not sure I want to hang out with the Tafts.
Well, because he got stuck in the bathtub in the White House. That was, you know.
But, well,
know
the other thing is they thought he had the munchies because he was such a large man.
Well, that's probably why they support. Maybe Taft was a big pot smoker. Okay, well, listen, thank you, crew in New York. Thank you, Bob Fedrakis. We're going to hear more about this. This is, I think, an opportunity for those of us who have been dealing with election theft. If we can find these guys, these corporate pot guys, somebody to get a bug up their joint about having this thing being stolen, I will leave you with this. There is no way in hell that the people of Ohio would have 2-1 against that thing. I mean, that did not happen. All those TV ads were very, very effective, and they did outspend the opposition. So Bob and I, you and I, we're going to have to look into this. Okay?
All right.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you again. Thank you very much, crew in New York. Another wonderful hour in Solartopia, talking about shutting down the Indian Point nuclear reactor and the Fitzgerald reactor in upstate New York, followed by corporate pot. We will see you again next week.
Was there an Solartopia? Adam? Was there an Eve?